Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour of the show. We'll take your calls nominating new teams for Matt to root for. I just want you to be able to live your life with inner peace.
I'll be afraid to ask what some of those teams might be.
It's up to the audience. I'm not nominating anybody. It's just having you on the air every day is a near basket case over a loss. And your teams do a lot of losing, by the way.
Yeah.
The key is to root for the winning team. You always go home happy. All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day, a highlight from a team Matt doesn't root for.
The kick, here's the pitch. Swung on, line to right. That'll be a base hit. Harper coming into third base. He's rounding. Garcia with a throw from right, and it is not in time. Game over. Harper slides safely on the single by Segura, and the Phillies win it. Another walk-off against the Fish. 3-2, the final.
Scott France with a call on the Phillies Radio Network. And see, Matt, that's what winning baseball sounds like.
Oh, my almighty!
Again, final half hour will nominate teams that Matt should be rooting for to change his life and his attitude around. It's all part of another therapy session on the show. For me, better therapy is to talk Penn State football with a guy like Sam Cohn from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Sam, great to have you on the beat. Welcome.
You guys, so much for having me. Appreciate you.
All right. So let's start with the game on Thursday night so everybody gets a chance to see everything for the first time. What were the general impressions that you took out of that game at Ross-Ade Stadium?
For starters, that was quite the up-and-down game. I think that the big part of that first half, the kind of biggest takeaway, was that final minute heading into halftime when it seemed essentially like a 14-point swing where Purdue's kind of coming down with a chance to either cut it to one or take a lead headed into half, and Penn State forces a turnover, and then instead of kneeling out the final 30 seconds of the clock, drives down the field and scores a touchdown to make it a two-score game. So the aggressiveness in week one against the conference opponent, I think, definitely stands out. And then the sort of hot and cold play of Sean Clifford, where he almost gave up a game-winning touchdown to the other team with a pick six in the fourth quarter, or something like 72 yards, and then manufactures a two-minute drill, a game-winning drive. So I think the up-and-down play of Sean Clifford was a big note out of the first game. The offensive line not taking the big step forward that every year people around Penn State are looking for it to take. And I thought the defense was pretty solid. I mean, James Franklin had touched on a little bit this week that there were way too many drop balls. The first one that comes to mind is that Joey Porter could have been a pick six on either the first or second drive of the game. But those are probably the biggest takeaways, I think, for me, is that the offensive line didn't necessarily take the step forward that maybe, of course, it's week one. I think at the end of the day, you can't really undervalue or underestimate how hard it is to play a conference opponent on the road in week one. It's a lot of kind of like getting those week one, I don't want to say jitters out of the way, but like those week one mistakes that are going to happen. It's tough on the road. It's tough against a conference opponent. But overall, the fact they were able to squeak out that win, especially in a two-minute drill at the end of the game, I thought was impressive.
On Sean Clifford for a moment, you talk about the hot and cold play. Well, the cold play is the one interception, but he also threw a touchdown pass every nine attempts. Was it actually more hot than cold?
I think so, but when you walk away from a game like that, how cold the cold was, I think there are going to be a lot of fans and a lot of pundits that look at that to say, well, you know, he played well, but that was the play that he needed to make, or that he, better way to phrase it, is that was the play that he couldn't make. You can't throw that interception in that situation as a sixth-year quarterback, you know, supposed to be after an 11-11 two seasons. That's the play you kind of can't make. So there were a lot of people, I mean, there were former Penn Staters on Twitter, and a lot of people on Twitter criticizing him for a play like that. But yes, I would agree with what you're saying, that there was a lot more hot and cold, but that's kind of the nature of the position, the nature of the game, that when you make a play so cold, that's the one people walk away with.
Many players make that play and don't come back from it. Mm-hmm. What does it tell you about him that he came back from it?
A lot. I think it speaks to his mentality, his leadership, his resiliency. The way that they manufactured that two-minute drill, I thought was really impressive. He made a lot of great, you know, they made the right play, especially that last play he had talked about after the game, that it was a cover zero they were playing against. They knew what was happening. They knew what the defense was doing, but it was a broken play. It fell apart. He was able to make a really nice toss off his back foot, obviously caught by Kevon Lee. I thought on that last drive they didn't really force the issue on any tough throws. They didn't force him to make any tough throws until that last play that scored the touchdown. That was, you know, him rolling out to his right. I thought there were a lot of just kind of dink and dunk, and then Mitch Kinsley did a lot of the groundwork, a lot of the legwork to get them down the field. Yeah. So I thought it was a well-manufactured two-minute drill, but they didn't force him after throwing the interception. They didn't force him to, or they didn't run any plays to kind of have him throw another ball like that.
Usually after 4 years, you do leave, and Jahan Dotson, after 4 years, did leave. He ended up being the first-round pick of the Washington Commanders. Mitchell Tinsley is not expected to be Jahan Dotson, Sam, as you and I both know, but he also made one of the key plays on that drive. What can he add to that offense?
He could be a huge piece of this offense. I think that wide receiver group, that trio between Keandre Lambert-Smith, Parker Washington, and then Adam Mitchell Tinsley, could really be one of the strongest groups that Penn State has. Obviously, two returners. And there's a stat, I don't have it off the top of my head, about those three. One of very few teams in college football to have a trio that had 500-plus receiving yards the year before or something like that. So they have a really, really strong group. And adding Mitchell Tinsley to that group is, especially as a guy who's played a lot of college football, I think really helps. His first catch was a touchdown. Obviously, it's a small sample size. We've seen one game of him as a Nittany Lion. But in the long run, I think he's going to be a really, really important piece, because now they can spread the ball out a lot more on the outside. Having those three guys, James Franklin's talked about wanting a strong six, having two at each position. He said he feels like they're at five right now. Getting to that six, I think, is going to be important.
Sam, as the game kept progressing, were you surprised that Purdue kept going at Joey Porter Jr.?
Yes and no. Yes, because it just makes sense. On paper, it makes more sense to go away from him. But it's interesting that James Franklin said something along the lines of that they weren't necessarily going at him. It's just that the way their offense worked was they kept finding him.
Right.
I think if you're Purdue, you do everything in your power to not go at him. But it was the nature of the way their offense was running and the way they were calling plays that they kind of found him. And obviously, he was probably their best defensive player in that game.
Purdue, in his final five possessions of the game, ended up with two first downs, and that was it. No points, final five possessions.
Yeah.
What difference did you see in how Penn State played those final five possessions that may have been an adjustment from earlier in the game?
That's a great question. I don't know if it was necessarily, I mean, from my point of view, again, there are probably people that saw something a little bit more in detail that maybe I didn't see, but I think from my point of view, it was a lot more comfortability. And the interesting part for me about the defense was Manny Diaz, obviously his first game coaching the defense, his first game play calling this defense, they were really aggressive from the get-go. Once I think things started to settle and they sort of had a better feel on Purdue, was really, really strong at, okay, Aiden O'Connell wants to get the ball out quick. They had a really, really solid, obviously great quarterback play leads to a lot of success for an offense, but Penn State did a really strong job of, you know, of really forcing the issue. They blitzed a lot, they attacked a lot, they gambled a lot. There were a couple, you know, almost interceptions or almost big plays where the Joey Porter drop, you know, in the beginning of the game, and then blanking on who it was, someone had a someone tried to jump a ball and just missed it.
Keaton Ellis jumped one and just missed it.
It might have been Keaton Ellis. But the point being that they were really aggressive defensively. That Manny Diaz talks a lot about the hallmark of a Manny Diaz defense is, you know, how do we force more turnovers? What can they do differently to create turnovers? Their whole mindset and their whole mantra is forcing turnovers, which might sound like, of course, that's every team in the country. But Manny Diaz, I think, pushes it a little bit more, has it in their head a little bit more. So it's the aggressiveness to get to the quarterback and to force turnovers and force the offense to make a mistake. I think as the game progressed, you saw a lot more comfortability in the defense in enforcing that issue, both in the front seven and the secondary.
Special teams is always a tricky one early in the season, Sam, as you and I both know. LSU and Florida State was a good example of that. Muff punts, blocked field goal, blocked extra point. What do you think of Penn State special teams operation in the opener?
Barney Amore was a masterclass in punting. It's funny to think about that in a matter of, it was something like 11 days, he went from being an FCS transfer, walk-on transfer, to getting a scholarship presented to him by Eli Manning, to being named the starter, to then having a really fantastic game. I think of his 8 punts, 3 of them landed inside the 20. He had talked a little bit after the game about how important consistency is for punting, so that when you make mistakes, that those mistakes are, if not mistakes that go left or right, they're mistakes that go straight and that kind of result in fair catches. So finding that consistency to at least get the ball straight and kind of put it generally where he wants to, he felt pretty solid about his first game. But, you know, I think for that to be his debut this season, special teams, I thought he was probably the highlight of that group.
Sam, you and I both know that in every other sport, you have preseason games, basketball's preseason scrimmages. Penn State, for example, have 2 this year. College football doesn't have that. So what on your checklist will you be looking for on Saturday to see where you think Penn State has improved or not improved?
I think there are 2 things I'm looking at for Penn State, because I hate to say that. I hate to call any game a cupcake game, but Ohio is essentially a cupcake game. It's essentially a preseason game against a non-conference team. For it to be their second game makes a difference. So the 2 things I think I'm looking for out of Penn State are, can they establish the run game a little bit better? Because they have a really strong backfield, especially with the 2 true freshmen, Katron Allen and Nick Singleton. Keevon Lee obviously being the veteran of that group. Purdue had a really solid run defense. Penn State wasn't exactly able to break any loose. They had some nice runs. They had some, like, almost one more block or get to the second level, whatever. But they didn't have that big, break. They didn't get that big broken play where they're able to break a run loose. So Ohio's run defense is not nearly the level of Purdue. So I think if they can really establish the run game a little bit better, just by breaking a couple loose and pushing the issue a little bit more in the run game, that's the first thing. And then, I'm not the only person to say this, but I hate to say it's not a Sean Clifford like redemption game, but it's a Sean Clifford. I heard what a lot of people said after I threw that interception, and I heard what a lot of people said about what Drew Allar, his one possession, how strong he looked as the backup when Sean Clifford was dealing with cramps. For Sean Clifford, it's to come out and just continue to play well. We talked about on the outset of this that there was a lot more hot than there was cold in that Purdue game, but that people sort of walk away with looking at the cold. For Sean Clifford, you have to really put it down the throats of Ohio.
Okay, and one final question, Sam, and that deals with playing a conference game to start. Notre Dame, Ohio State's a non-con, but a big game. Florida State, LSU, non-con, big game. Georgia, Oregon, non-conference game, but big game. Okay, so Penn State opens up with a conference game. Right? And they're not the only ones to do that. But how do you feel about opening with a conference game as opposed to a non-conference game of some sort?
It really does have its pros and cons. Off the top of my head, I believe this is the 5th time that Penn State's done it in 130-plus years, and the 3rd year in a row. So it's something that maybe this roster that's been around a little bit has gotten a little more used to, or maybe this staff that's been around a little has gotten a little more used to. It's definitely not easy because it helps to have those out-of-conference games, those bye games, where you can sort of get your footing, as we talked about, those first they're going to make those first-game mistakes. So to have something like that early, to have a game like this, it really hits them in the mouth early, and then I think it's better in the long run. But it helps early on in the season to have those games where you can make those mistakes and still not be detrimental mistakes in games against non-conference opponents that maybe aren't up to the level of the Big Ten. So I think it has its pros and cons. Because they were able to beat Purdue on the road, that's a really tough ask to go into another Big Ten stadium and win an opener against a conference opponent. The fact they were able to win, I think, really works in their favor, and I think in the long run is going to help them.
Well, contrary to popular belief, Sam, I have not done all the games for 130 years.
Yeah. Me neither.
Sam, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate you having me on.
Sam Cohn, Philadelphia Inquirer. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Let's get final half hour nominations for teams Matt should now be rooting for. Because you apparently have a love-hate relationship with all the teams you root for. Love them. But you hate them.
Yeah, it's a fairly accurate way to put it. But I'm always loyal, even in the bad.
No, I mean you're flat out angry. By the way, Jessica Pegula plays tonight, by the way, at the U.S. Open. TV ratings, U.S. Open, have been good. Well, Serena Williams, man, good. The ratings this weekend are going to be a disaster. Here are the numbers for college football. Ohio State, Notre Dame, 10.5 million viewers. Most watched regular season game on ESPN in 5 years. Okay? 10.5 million viewers on Saturday. LSU, Florida State, 7.6 million on Sunday night. Oregon and Georgia drew 6.2 million viewers on Saturday. Now, for example, Wisconsin's game with Illinois State, 498,000 viewers. Season 6 premiere of the sci-fi comedy Rick and Morty, watched by Matt in his home, 659,001 with Matt. Serena Williams, her ratings built all week. Her first match on Monday got 2.7 million. Her second round match on Wednesday, 3.6 million. 4.8 million on Friday when she finally lost. Okay. So those are some of the TV numbers for the week. And again, Penn State had 500,000 more viewers for their game with Purdue as opposed to the backyard bash. I know it's interesting. The story says college football is back, and so is Ohio State's TV dominance. Notre Dame has a lot to do with this rating, too. Please. Remember last year when Notre Dame played Florida State, that game had something like 7.5-8 million viewers. So believe me, they brought some cachet to the table. Florida upsetting Utah on ESPN primetime at 2.95 million. So about 600,000 less than the Penn State-Purdue game. So there you are. Those are some of the numbers from the weekend.
Even Ohio State has to be nauseating about the viewership on TV.
What
enough. I've just always found their fan base nauseating overall, and everything around the program, the hype around the program, and now it's gone into the TV ratings. Stop. You're playing Notre Dame, as you said. Of course it's going to be that high.
But Ohio State was number one last year. Notre Dame was ninth. Ohio State was number one last year in TV viewership. Penn State was fourth. Notre Dame was ninth. I mean, I'm just using numbers. I mean, that's...
No, I get it.
Notre Dame's a big attraction. There's no getting around it. But now, is Ohio State helped by the gigantic Michigan game that had 15 million viewers? Yes. Are they helped by a Penn State game where both, you know, where you've got two entities bringing cachet to the table? Yeah. So Notre Dame and Ohio State both brought cachet to the table. And it ended up being a great viewer, 10.5 million. And that's because they both brought brands to the table.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Where do you have our first nomination? The Golden State Warriors.
The only problem with the West Coast teams is, like, I could barely watch them.
That makes it better. Because when you watch your teams, you're a basket case. To me, I think, in fact, the University of Hawaii would be perfect for you. They're not done till 2 or 3 in the morning. You're sound asleep. You just got to wake up and look at the result.
Yeah, but I'd probably most likely be upset by it because Hawaii stinks. But Timmy Chang's, though, is going to turn around that program, so maybe I will jump on that bandwagon. I take that back.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I'm trying to keep you sane. The next nomination was for the Colorado Avalanche.
You know what? That's not bad. Again, a little bit on the late side, but we're getting closer, and that's not bad because they are a good team. They're pretty solid right now.
Next nomination was for the Rams.
No, sorry. The Rams are nauseating to me.
What are you talking about? They have a professional quarterback.
No. Yeah, the Rams are out. They got too many hotheads on the team that I don't like. Sean McVay, I think, is kind of nauseating. So, yeah, no, I'm out on the Rams.
They have a pro quarterback. It's a big upgrade for you.
Yeah, no.
And then the Dodgers or the Braves are the other ones?
Braves, no. I've always hated the Braves.
Yeah, but they're winners. They won the championship last year. This year, giving up for not, surge back. Right? Doing great. I mean, I know the Mets won this afternoon, but the Braves are already, you know, they're playing the A's right now. You could be rooting for a team like that. They've got four more wins than the Yankees do, and they started 23-27. They have four more wins.
I'd lean Dodgers.
They got a pitching staff that is not afraid to face winning teams. I mean, this is kind of a bold move for Gerrit Cole tonight. mean, the Twins are three games over 500. Now, I realize that's pretty close to the line here. I mean, but, you know, say the Twins hang on in this game. They're winning right now 3-1. There'll be four games over 500. That might be the biggest win Cole's had all year. Meanwhile, Jordan Montgomery's 4-0 since going to the Cardinals.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
How about Liverpool?
I wouldn't hate that. I don't watch a whole lot of soccer. I like soccer, I just don't watch a whole lot.
We've got to get you into a sport that, like, is, you know, like, get you less involved.
But if we're going to go right to that, the Union are dominating right now.
What do you think of lacrosse?
I like calling it.
There's no stakes in it. I got to give you something where there's, like, very few stakes.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind lacrosse. I've grown to like the sport for when I call all the high school games.
Now, I hate to say this, Liverpool is losing to Napoli today 4-1. So it's a bad choice. How about Tottenham? No?
Sure.
They lead Olympique Marseille to 2-0.
I'd rather watch MLS, but I could deal with that, I guess.
MLS?
Yeah, I just said the Union are dominating this year.
You could take little Luke, little Mark to the games. Now watch Daddy's blood pressure go through the roof. Two of them muttering going back to the car. He's the same way at home. I mean, no wonder they want to mow the lawn. They got to get away from you during games.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
You're mad that Jordan Montgomery's 4-0 with the Cardinals.
A little bit, only because I just wonder if he would have those numbers if he were still a Yankee, and the answer would probably be no.
Must have a better cast around him. No?
No, I just couldn't handle the pinstripes, that's all.
He pitched well for the Yankees. What are you talking about?
He was up... He was slightly above mediocre for me. Above average. How about that?
28 strikeouts, 4 walks. See, when you get hooked up with a really good manager that's a great guy in Ollie Marmol, it makes a difference. As opposed to Captain Analytics.
Oh, I hear you on that one. But the Cardinals I can get on because I actually kind of rooted for the Cardinals as a kid.
Oh, you guys know Ollie and I are friends, right?
Yes.
Okay. So everybody understands the joke.
Yes, I know.
Okay, Ollie Marmol and I are friends. So
in fact, my dad took me to a Cardinals game at the old Busch Stadium.
Really?
When I was 8,
the big circle,
I believe.
The big circle.
Yes.
God, they only have one fewer win than the Yankees. Man, you guys are really slumping. Ooh. Kind of brutal.
So the Cardinals I can get behind.
Ooh, Judge's at the plate. He can tie the game up with one swing.
He already just hit 55.
Yeah, it made it 3-1. Big home run.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, that's like the equivalent, for example, of Bob Uecker. I hit a grand slam once, made the final 13-2. Big hit.
I mean, it really is amazing that teams are still pitching to him, knowing how bad the Yankees' offense is other than him.
But he is a difficult guy to pitch to, as I pointed out.
Right. Intentionally walk him.
Normally a big man, I wouldn't do that. You have to have professional pride. But normally a big man like that has such a big strike zone that it is a problem for the big man. Okay? and but not him. And again, he does not crowd the plate. He's in the middle of the batter's box, and he's has long enough arms. He made an out, by the way. He has long enough arms to get the outside pitch. And because he's off the plate, you throw him an inside pitch, and it's still in his wheelhouse. He's a very hard guy to pitch to. By the way, he struck out. So much for that.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
So say the Twins go on and win. SportsCenter will only play the home run by Judge. It's where we are in life.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me.
Like, look, what, you know, he will pass Maris. And that'll be great for the game. Especially at a time of the year where football is taking over. I mean, football's just about completely taken over here. I mean, yeah, college football over the weekend, you see the TV ratings on that. You don't see any baseball ratings like that. You don't. Tomorrow night, you got Bills and Rams. That game's on NBC, by the way. The Amazon Prime games do not start for a week. And Amazon Prime will be every week after that, except for Thanksgiving. Gleyber Torres, by the way, just tied the game with a two-run homer.
About time he does something.
Again, what should have been a joyous moment for you, which should have been a moment of joy, okay? Like, I'm happy. Hey, that's great, man. Got us back in the game, right? It's about time. You need therapy.
Well, when you can't make a play with your glove, and the only thing good you had was your bat, and you can't even hit right now, what good are you?
Oh, my God, you hate everything. What do you like? Let's take this back to basics here. Let's start over again.
I like good, consistent play out of my players, out of my teams.
I feel like we're doing Apollo 13 here. Okay, let's do this from a perspective of status. Tell me, what do we have in the spacecraft that's good? Now, I feel like I'm asking you the question. You're going to do the old, I'll get back to you, Gene.
I don't know. We're having trouble with Artemis. Although I think that launch was supposed to launch tomorrow.
It was supposed to be Monday.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, what do you like? Maybe we can build upon some positives here. So, let the audience know what you like, because right now they're turning on you in droves because of your negativity.
I like seeing players do what they're supposed to do.
But part of this game, okay, Aaron Judge is hitting 302, right?
Yes.
Right? Which means 7 times out of 10, he makes an out. Which means 7 times out of 10, he didn't do what you wanted him to do.
But then he's also backed it up with great play in the outfield with his glove.
Is he the only guy in that team you like?
As of right now, actually, no. I like Oswaldo Cabrera. I'm loving this kid right now.
Oh.
He's been fun to watch.
Oh, God. All right.
And I can't help it. I have a little bit of the home region bias because, of course, he did a lot of good damage with the Rail Riders. Now he's doing damage at Pinstripes. So I'm loving the kid right now. Other than that, no, not really anybody else at the moment.
So, any known entity you don't like? Because nobody knows anything about Cabrera. Nothing. Zero. He's hitting 182.
Yeah, but he's doing well. He's playing, making great plays in the field with his glove.
He's hitting 182.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hitting lower than O'Neill Cruz. And that's hard to do.
I know.
182.
He's still been fun to watch in the field, especially.
182.
Yeah.
Fun.
It's not good, but.
Well, that's a riot. Let's see here. Well, 12 hits, 3 RBIs. He's got 5 more strikeouts than hits. He's 0 for 2 in stolen bases. No wonder you love him. He's got an on-base percentage of .235. I can see why you're over the moon. But he made a good play in the outfield.
Anywhere, you name it. He can play anywhere.
Except at the plate or on the bases. So you don't like IKF?
Not really, no.
Andujar.
I used to, but he's done zip bola since, I don't know, a couple years ago when he got hurt.
Higashioka.
He's good behind the plate, but eh.
He's hitting 9 points higher than Cabrera. He's hitting 191. No? Not your guy?
Eh.
Let's see. Peralta's now pitching. You like him?
I do like Wandy, yes.
Herman?
Eh. Been better lately, but overall, eh.
Do you like cake and ice cream?
Oh, of course.
Okay, I'm just trying to go like some positives here. I'm trying to find something.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. All right.
And I am a now, only because Lisa made me admit this, admitting is the first thing. Admitting you have a problem, and that is I'm a chocoholic.
Yeah, but almost everybody is. That's good.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. I'm just trying to get you on a positive track. So cake, ice cream, and chocolate.
Yes.
So if we take you to the ballpark, if we can get you cake, ice cream, and chocolate, it will then dull your senses enough where all that hate for your team gets flushed.
We need like a... If we're going to go that route, I always like the chocolate cake with the vanilla ice cream. That's just the perfect combination.
Whatever it takes to get you happy. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Yeah, we found out previously. It was kind of expected to be that way. Mitch has done a great job. I was one of the twos and threes all the time. Just felt like I was doing a great job of getting better. That's all I'm continuing to do now, getting into the regular season. A little different than college, but scheduling, that's something I'm trying to iron out early in my career here. But, I have some previous experience with it. So I'm under Coach Tom, just trying to learn more.
You found out previously, but when the first step chart came out and the twos and threes were flip-flop, what's going through your mind? I mean, are you texting everybody being like, what's happening?
I trust Coach Tomlin a lot. So, what he told the team, shout out Gentry, I knew that it was what it was, not, what was released, obviously. So I was okay. I'm sure you guys had a field day with that. But, I was good with it.
I would assume that was Trubisky, right?
No, that was Kenny Pickett.
It was Kenny Pickett? Oh. I had no idea who it was. We need to pick a team for you that is A, overseas, and B, where you don't really know who the players are. What do you think? I think that's the conclusion we've come to here.
I'd rather go just deal with U.S. West Coast.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, overseas, something.
Yeah, but I really don't have much interest in overseas sports.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get you to calm down.
Until it comes... until it comes to the Olympics.
You see, the suit was the opposite. So the Steelers were playing a playoff game with the Ravens, I think. And Le'Veon Bell, as usual, is hurt for the game, can't play. And normally one of the prerequisites to greatness is showing up. And he said, but the backup running back, he did this and this and this in the preseason. And of course, and I said, Kevin, there's a reason the guy only has 8 carries during the regular season. Obviously, the other guy's way better. Oh, no, they're going to be fine. I said, Kevin, he won't even gain 20 yards in this game. And he gained 12. So he was 180 of you. He was overly optimistic.
That's true.
You, on the other hand...
I'm honest.
I mean, you're like you're on the train in the movie, on the bus in The Fugitive, and you see the train coming every day. Tomorrow we have our high school football roundtable. Bill Hillgrove and Merrill Reese. Do you have a game this week?
I do not have a game this week. I'll be watching. I'll be monitoring from home.
So is Shikalimi's trying to break through for the first time, right?
Correct.
So they've got a game Friday night with
at Central Mountain, who's also struggled out of the gate.
Yeah.
This is a good chance for them to get a W. Central Mountain's not the team that they were the last two seasons. And then Selinsgrove's got to go to Jersey Shore. That's a tough matchup. And who's Lewisburg have this week? Oh, they're at Montoursville this week. That's interesting because Montoursville's is struggling now, too. They've had some off-the-field issues, too, with the program. So that should be a decent game up there.
How about the Yamuri Giants?
You know what? I actually would be okay with that. They've been fun to watch. Because isn't Masahiro Tanaka with them now?
Who knows? Who cares? Just something that you can't watch.
I'll follow the team that Tanaka's on now.
I mean, when he was at the Yankees, you hated him.
That's because he couldn't stay healthy.
Ah, I know it.